Listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. Just ahead, the United States says it receives proof that an American woman held by Islamic State militants is dead. U.S. senators voice skepticism about Iranian nuclear negotiations. And we'll have a report from on board an EU vessel patrolling for African migrants making dangerous journeys across the Mediterranean. I'm Michael Lippin. U.S. officials have confirmed that an American woman held hostage by Islamic State militants in Syria is dead. They made the announcement Tuesday, 4 days after the Islamic State group claimed that 26-year-old aid worker Kayla Mueller was killed in an airstrike by Jordanian warplanes serving in a U.S.-led coalition. White House spokesman Josh Earnest said U.S. intelligence analysts have not determined when or how Mueller died after she was kidnapped in Syria in August 2013. But he said there was no evidence of the claim by the Islamic State, also known as ISIL, that a Jordanian airstrike killed her.
What is not possible to call into question is that ISIL, regardless of her cause of death, is responsible for it. This, after all, is the organization that was holding her against her will. That means they are responsible for her safety and her well-being, and they are therefore responsible for her death.
Well, earlier Tuesday, a U.S. National Security Council spokesperson said Mueller's family received a private message from her captors in recent days with information that corroborated news of her death. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has revealed that his government is receiving information about U.S.-led airstrikes against Islamic State militants in Syria. Mr. Assad told the BBC in Damascus there have been exchanges of messages through third parties such as Iraq, but he said those messages do not include tactical information. The Syrian president also said his forces would not join the U.S.-led coalition, whom he accuses of supporting terrorists trying to take over his country. Western powers have long demanded that Mr. Assad step down for leading a deadly years-long crackdown on an opposition uprising that escalated into a civil war. A U.S. official has confirmed that the American embassy in Yemen is closing down because of deteriorating security since last month's resignation of the Yemeni president. Yemeni employees of the embassy in Sana'a said Tuesday the American ambassador informed staff that he will leave Yemen by Wednesday. A U.S. defense official acknowledged that Yemen's political unrest is impacting U.S.-led counterterrorism capabilities in the country. But the U.S. official said the American military is still training some Yemeni forces and may carry out more operations inside Yemen against al-Qaeda militants. American senators of the two main U.S. political parties are expressing growing doubts that U.S.-led negotiations with Iran will produce an agreement that prevents Iran from building a nuclear weapon. VOA's Michael Bowman has this report from Capitol Hill.
One day after President Barack Obama said the time has come for Iran to decide on its nuclear program, members of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee met behind closed doors to hear from unnamed administration officials on the status of the talks and what exactly the United States knows about Iran's current nuclear capabilities. Committee Chairman Bob Corker, a Republican, emerged to make a somber assessment.
We really are in a position of managing proliferation now with the country of Iran.
The committee's top Democrat, Senator Robert Menendez, echoed the concern, noting the United States is aiming to make sure Iran would need a one-year breakout period to build a nuclear weapon if an accord falters.
If we enter a new world order and where we are going to manage proliferation, where in fact a country could be a year away from the possibility of breaking out nuclear capabilities for nuclear weapons. That's a different world and a far more challenging world.
The current negotiating round ends in June, but participants are aiming to hammer out the framework for an accord by next month. Michael Bowman, VOA News, the Capitol.
The White House says President Barack Obama spoke by phone with Russian President Vladimir Putin on Tuesday to urge the Russian leader to back a peace deal for Ukraine. Mr. Obama's call, described in a White House statement, came as Ukraine's government said separatist rocket strikes on the eastern city of Kramatorsk killed at least 12 people and wounded more than 80 others. The Ukrainian Foreign Ministry accused the pro-Russian rebels of a deliberate massacre of the city's civilians. The White House statement said Mr. Obama called on Mr. Putin to seize the opportunity to support peace proposals when the Russian president meets with the leaders of France, Germany, and Ukraine in Minsk on Wednesday. Italian authorities say at least 29 African migrants have died of hypothermia while crossing the Mediterranean in freezing weather and rough seas. The Italian Coast Guard said another 76 migrants survived the journey, which began on a tightly packed inflatable boat. The tragedy has renewed calls for the European Union to resume large-scale search and rescue missions across the Mediterranean. Henry Ridgewell has this report from on board an EU patrol vessel off Sicily.
In temperatures close to freezing and waves 8 meters high, Italian Coast Guard vessels took the migrants on board Sunday. Several had already died from the cold. Many more succumbed to hypothermia on the open decks of the rescue boats. As the Coast Guard vessels returned to the Italian island of Lampedusa, body bags were unloaded onto the dock. Lampedusa's mayor blamed last year's controversial closure of Italy's search and rescue mission for the tragedy. The European Union-run Operation Triton has taken over from the Italian mission, but has fewer vessels and patrols close to the European shoreline. Speaking before the tragedy, Isabella Cooper of the EU border agency Frontex said migrants in peril would still be rescued.
Most of the situations that we have been seeing here require immediate provision of search and rescue. And of course, if such situation emerges, we will go even beyond our operational area to save human lives.
The latest deaths have prompted renewed calls for humanitarian patrols across the Mediterranean. But the European Union is divided over whether such patrols encourage more migrants to risk their lives at sea. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, Pozzallo, southern Italy.
And two more stories from you from Africa. The death toll from West Africa's Ebola epidemic has risen to 9,152, a sharp increase following weeks in which the outbreak appeared to be weakening. The UN Special Envoy on Ebola, Dr. David Nabarro, told reporters in Geneva the latest figures from the World Health Organization show the outbreak is not yet under control. And suspected Boko Haram militants from Nigeria have killed some of the passengers they seized from a bus in Cameroon on Monday. A witness tells VOA the kidnappers killed 7 of the 20 hostages and dumped their bodies on Cameroon's northern boundary with Nigeria. The witness said the kidnappers freed 3 elderly women and were still holding 10 hostages, including 8 girls aged 11 to 14. Well, that's it for International Edition on The Voice of America. We'll be back at 0330 Universal Time for another check on the world news.
We check business news now on VOA Global with Ira Melman. I'm Jim Stevenson. U.S. stocks rallied toward the end of the session Tuesday, sending the benchmark S&P 500 to its highest close this year. Investor optimism was fueled by hopes that embattled Greece and its creditors are nearing a compromise to avert a default, even though both sides continue to reiterate their stances. The mood on Wall Street was also boosted by better-than-expected earnings from companies such as Coca-Cola and CVS. The S&P 500 closed 1.1% higher at 2068 and turned positive for the year. The Dow Jones Industrial Average jumped 139 points to close at 17,868. The NASDAQ Composite also up 61 points or 1.3% to finish at 4787.
Consider that you bought Apple many years ago. Shares of Apple closed up 1.9% at a new record high of $122.02 Tuesday, pushing the iPhone maker's market capitalization above $700 billion with a B for the first time. As of Tuesday's close, the Cupertino, California-based company was valued at $710.8 billion, making Apple the first U.S. company to surpass the $700 billion mark.
Forrest Gump was happy he bought in the 80s.
Yes.
Germany took a tough line against Greece over its bailout Tuesday, tempering market hopes that a deal between Athens and its European creditors was in the works. The finance minister warned that negotiations with Greece, which wants to scrap its bailout program in favor of a new one with easier terms, would be dead if Athens pulls out of the current one. He also said there was no chance of reaching a final deal at an emergency Eurozone finance ministers meeting that taking place on Wednesday. today. That's a look at business news on VOA Global.
Here on VOA Global, took a look at the box of calendars coming into the studio today.
It's getting a little light.
It's dwindling.
But that's a good thing. That means a lot of you have your VOA 2015 calendar. If not, you can ask for one still.
How do you do that, Jim?
You write to us by email, voaasia@voanews.com. And Ira, what do they need to include in their email?
Make sure you put your address in English in your own language just to make sure you get it. I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. The dramatic easing of diplomatic and cultural relations between the United States and Cuba, initiated by President Obama in December, continues. Recently, excerpts from Cubanacan, the first new opera to be written in Cuba in 50 years, was sung in a New York art gallery for a small group of reporters and potential patrons. VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with the opera's American producer, its composer, and its diva.
That's the Cuban soprano Barbara Yanes singing an aria that occurs early on in Cubanacan. The opera follows the fortunes of architect Ricardo Porro, who was commissioned by Fidel Castro to design Cuba's world-famous art schools for the post-revolutionary Cuba of the early 1960s. In this scene, which takes place before the revolution, Selma, Porro's well-placed friend, informs him that dictator Fulgencio Batista's forces know of his support for Castro and tells him he must flee Cuba for his own safety. Charles Koppelman, Cubanacan's American producer and librettist, is proud that this project is being showcased, even in this modest way, in the Big Apple.
I'm thrilled. I'm very excited. I've been developing this opera for 11 years, and I started it because I had to. I needed to. I wanted to. The story had to be told. It wouldn't let go of me. And the fact that time is sort of caught up, and now Cuba is on people's radar, big changes with the United States, makes it a perfect time for this opera, I believe. I was just a little bit ahead of the curve, but I think we're going to see more of these kind of collaborations.
Koppelman says that much of Cuba's vast artistic wealth remains unknown in the U.S.
You would be amazed, not just in opera and music and dance, fine art, you name it. The work is fantastic, and a little of it does get out, and certainly around the world. But I think with the easing, Americans will be able to tune in a little better to what this is all about.
The riches can flow both ways. Through a translator, soprano Barbara Yanes tells the VOA she's excited to be in New York, home of the famed Museum of Modern Art, the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and of course, the Metropolitan Opera itself.
To be there at the entrance of a museum and to see all its fabulous works of art from around the world is when you really feel an emotional connection.
In the opera's storyline, as in life, things did not work out well for the architect. Many of the art schools got built, but changing Cuban politics prevented several from being completed. In this aria, Selma informs Porro that he is once again out of favor with the authorities. This time it's Castro, and that he must return to exile. Much like Cuban-American relations throughout history, Cubanacan contains tragedy, farce, and beauty. Still, this opera represents an important personal and professional achievement for composer Roberto Valera. At 76, Valera remembers pre-revolutionary Cuba well and has spent his career teaching music at the very art schools that form the dramatic backdrop of the work. Valera is hopeful that art will help the U.S. and Cuba experiment with friendship after their long-time estrangement has failed.
I think it's important that we communicate, speak, and begin to untangle everything that has been tangled for so many years. Music is a universal art, an art that needs no translation. We know to communicate and discuss it, and as a result, we have been able to arrive at favorable conclusions that make our main objective as artists possible, to create beauty.
Cubanacan is scheduled to premiere at the Havana Biennale in May. After the arts festival, producers and stars alike hope it will be invited on a world tour that will include the capitals of Europe, along with China, San Francisco, and New York. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. Hear us every day at voanews.com.
Hi, everyone. I'm David Byrd, and here's what's happening now. Approximately 20 million Americans practice yoga in some form. According to the latest figures, practitioners spend more than $10 billion a year on classes and equipment. More than 82% of those practitioners are women. But a new class in Burbank, California, hopes to change that last statistic. Broga, yoga for bros or guys, combines traditional yoga with exercises and high-intensity interval training.
Forward, directly over the ankle, and towards your right pinky. And relaxation.
It also works to improve core strength, muscle tone, cardiovascular fitness, and posture. Robert Sidoti is one of the co-founders of Broga. He told the Associated Press that the aim is to complement traditional workouts like weight training.
What we want to do is we want the yoga experience to come through by giving accessible, challenging fitness and heart sort of pumping movements.
You won't find any candles, chimes, chanting, or spiritual music in a Broga class. Robert Sidoti says the aim in his class at Crunch Gym in Burbank is to build strength, flexibility, and balance.
All the physical benefits that any yoga class really offers, Broga offers, okay? But maybe the strength is a little bit more enhanced. We do a lot more strength than a traditional yoga class. So that's huge, because I think a lot of guys are deconditioned and they have poor patterns and posture, and what we're looking to do is change that.
Jimmy Ying is a 43-year-old actor who takes the Broga class. He told the AP that it was a lot tougher than he thought it would be.
It was super challenging. I'm pretty much a beginner yoga person. Like, I just started, and that was really challenging. It was inspiring because it was really, really worked your muscles. And then he really talked you through it. It was cool. It was almost like a sport. It felt kind of sporty.
Mina Dimian is a media consultant from Los Angeles and regularly attends Broga classes. He says that the class focuses more on conditioning that men are interested in.
It also speaks to kind of the male body. There's a lot of back work and leg work that, you know, sometimes you miss in your classic vinyasa classes. So it pushes the male hormone a little bit more, which is nice.
But Broga is not just for men. Some women are taking the classes, too. Robert Sidoti says that his class appeals to both genders, but it might not appeal to everyone.
How it's different is that it is geared for the average guy and woman, really, who's not interested in bending deeply into their body. They want the exercise, and so we're giving accessible, doable postures so that they can actually really enjoy the experience and not be frustrated throughout the entire class.
John Rowley is the wellness director of the International Sports Science Association. He says that the demand for Broga classes is only expected to increase as the word gets out.
But the reality is, yoga is good for vitality. It's good for getting you stretched out. Let's face it, when you're gym lifting weights or doing, you don't stretch out. It's good for vitality. It's also good for peace of mind. It relaxes you at the end of a stressful day, or if you do it in the beginning of the day, it starts your day off to a great start. There are over 20 million Americans currently doing yoga, and 17% of those are the bros, the guys who are actually getting into the yoga classes now and doing yoga. And they're anticipating on that doubling over the coming year, which is incredible. Now, they've got only 100 instructors that actually do yoga on a regular basis for the bros, which they call Broga, and they're expecting that over the next 12 months to go to 500 instructors, which is critical.
Robert Sidoti says he thinks the class has caught on because it offers yoga moves while adding strength training.
We're specifically going after a certain demographic here, and we're not going to speak to every single person, and we're not looking to dominate the world of yoga or fitness, but definitely tackle a huge portion of men and women who are interested in this style. It's just another style.
So what do you think? Would you try Broga? What's your favorite form of exercise? Let us know by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia. And remember, you can always email your questions or comments to voaasia@voanews.com. And that's what's happening now. Until next time, I'm David Byrd.
Coming up on VOA Global, we'll check sports. And again, we've talked about this earlier, Jim, and in previous days, that our sports news more and more crosses over into news.
Right.
And that's our lead story, which you'll be hearing in just a few seconds here, that in Egypt, the ramifications of that riot at a soccer game where people were killed, that's our top story. And unfortunately, more and more stories are just like that. It's time to check sports. Egyptian police have arrested 21 soccer fans in the wake of a deadly stampede outside a Cairo stadium. They're accusing them of attacking policemen, damaging police cars, and terrorizing the public. That according to a prosecutor. The prosecutor told reporters that none of the 21 had been formally charged with anything yet. Authorities say at least 19 people were killed Sunday night when police fired tear gas into a crowd of fans waiting in a fenced narrow corridor to try to enter the stadium in eastern Cairo. Many of the dead suffocated or were crushed in the melee. It was the deadliest act of soccer-related violence in Egypt since 2012. Prosecutors said 22 people died. The government's health ministry said it was 19. Among the dead, a 14-year-old girl. No police officers were killed, although a police vehicle was set afire. A disagreement over the death toll, which could not be reconciled, reflects the confused, bitter disputes between police and civilian accounts of just what happened.
Well, some good news, perhaps, for women's football. FIFA is aiming to launch a Women's Club World Cup competition in 2017. A FIFA task force for women's football set the target Tuesday. That plan could be approved at a March meeting of FIFA Executive Committee, which includes task force chairwoman Moya Dodd of Australia. An elite competition would give incentives to clubs, member federations, and confederations to develop women's football. FIFA has pledged to use World Cup profits to double funding for women's football through 2018. The Men's Club World Cup has been very successful. It's played each December, features a champion from each of FIFA's six confederations, plus the host country's league winner, Real Madrid, won the latest edition in Morocco.
NFL football. Peyton Manning reportedly wants to play in the NFL next season, but the bigger question might be what his team, the Denver Broncos, want. NFL media reported Tuesday morning that Manning is gearing up for a return in 2015. However, other reports say the Broncos are uncertain whether they want Manning back for another season.
After 25 years of ineligibility, Pete Rose could see his name on the Baseball Hall of Fame ballot in the near future. MLB's new commissioner, Rob Manfred, might be willing to open the door for possible reinstatement of Rose. He was banned from baseball because he was betting. That happened back in 1989. That's sports on VOA Global.
This is our Music of the Day report with Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman. As hip-hop's original misanthrope, Kanye West took the stage at the Grammys, putting aside 6 years of beef against the music industry's biggest event. Another artist is carrying forward the torch of calling out the show for marginalizing black artists, or maybe just one artist in particular. Trey Songz, who was not a nominee this year, took to Twitter Sunday night to declare that the Grammys shortchange culture for popularity every year, insisting that his rant was not throwing shade at the big event. He added, 10 years I've been able to feed my family and have the support of so many people just for doing what I do anyway, for nothing.
Dressed up for the club, waiting on Nick to come pick you up, baby. Ooh, when I saw you walking out the door, ooh, I just knew you needed something more. Now I'm whipping straight back to the crib. Gonna give you something that you won't forget, no, baby. You out the clothes, ooh, I just wanna see you dancing slow motion. We can take our time, baby, in slow motion. We can take our time, stay here in slow.
out your head and take a sip. Go put this joint between your lips, baby. Ooh, why don't you make yourself comfortable? Ooh, while I go in with this tongue of you. So tell me when you're ready. I'ma speed it up for you just for a second. Just for a second. Then I'ma slow it back down and keep it steady. Just wanna get you out them clothes. Oh, I just wanna see you get to slow motion.
The name of the song, Slow Motion. It's by Trey Songz, who was not at the Grammys this year. So what do you think? Should he have been? It's a good song. I think he's a very talented artist.
There are a lot of talented artists, but
absolutely.
I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, but, he clarified on his tweet that, he wasn't ranting. He said, this is not a rant, about any one song or chart or the Grammys or anything like that. He did conclude, though. He said, my fans give me the real reward. No trophy ever could. Love. So every time they give me nothing, I think of you. Thank you. I love you. That's pretty classy.
Isn't that sweet?
Yeah.
But, awards programs, just take a look for the nominations for the Academy Awards, mm-hmm. always have controversy.
Yes, they do.
This one, a lack of minorities, a lack of African-Americans. Especially directors and some actors have won awards, but
as
directors.
I say, no. There's always next year.
There is. Didn't you have one of those smart TVs?
Yes, I do.
You do.
Sometimes I don't think it's so smart because I punch the remote and it's not doing what I think it should be doing. But
This you don't have one that you actually talk to and it talks.
No,
back,
well,
right?
I talk to it, but it doesn't respond.
I hope it doesn't after what you say to it. But it's voice recognition technology in Samsung, South Korean company's internet-connected TVs, captures and transmits nearby conversations. So basically, your television is eavesdropping on you.
Wow, you are the show.
That revealed in Samsung's smart TV privacy policy that's available on its website, probably in very, very small print.
Yes, I would think so.
What it says is, please be aware that if your spoken words include personal or other sensitive information, that information will be among the data captured and transmitted to a third party through your use of voice recognition, according to the policy. So if you're sitting there, you're watching some kind of program, and you shout out some things that we really can't say on the radio here.
Yeah, well, I guess, they're trying to receive some feedback maybe about the programming, but this could have a much wider net than that.
Especially if you talk to it and it suddenly talks back to you.
Yeah.
Then we got real problems. We would like you to talk back to us, so make sure you respond to us and send us email and things like that. Let's see. Tracy Carter has been our director. And let's see. Carl Starling, for the most part, has been our technical director. And our thanks to Diane Gao, who is our chief cook, bottle washer, and boss
editor.
And everything.
Thank you. Thanks to everybody.